Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's up, everybody, and congratulations, you have found the great new baseball show that is District Baseball. It is our first ever episode. We could not be more excited. For those of you that have been with us from the beginning, we appreciate you sticking with us. And for those of you that are new, welcome. And again, congratulations, because this is the best baseball show. You've stumbled upon a gold mine, and you should reward yourself for that. You should give yourself a pat on the back. But I am Nick. You can follow me on, I was going to say Twitter, but I guess it's X now, at the Coach Moose. And I am joined by the one, the only Trey. You can follow him on Twitter at reverse 2 R's 2 S's. And I'm sure you know him, because if you're here watching on YouTube, you know who he is. You know the man, the myth, the legend that is Trey. But Trey, what's going on?
Nick, it's going really well. I'm super excited to be doing this show more often, basically, and just having more content to post. It's gonna be fun. We're gonna be using September kind of as a little test run on this show, and then make sure you guys, if you guys do enjoy, make sure to leave us feedback as well, because we want to improve in the off season as well. But yeah, I'm super excited, and I'm really excited to get into some baseball talk.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like I said, this is a new show, and we are using this as kind of a ramp up period for 2024, ironing out all the kinks and seeing what we can do better, what we are doing well, and all that good stuff. So as always, we wouldn't have a show if it weren't for the fans and you guys, your support. So please let us know what you think, and hopefully you enjoy it. But yeah, we've got a packed episode for you today. And off the top, so it's funny. So if we recorded this last week, if last week was our first ever episode, we are flying high. Cloud nine, Nationals are back, baby. Hopes. For those that don't know, I run the District on Deck account on Twitter and site as well. But I made a joke. I think it was during the Yankee series. I was like, Nationals are one series win away from being necessarily put on every in the hunt graphic. And it happened, because not only did they, you know, take the series from the Yankees, they took one against the Marlins as well. And I saw an in the hunt graphic, or at least a wild card graphic that had the Nationals, you know, 7.5 games back or whatever it was at the time. And it was awesome. Same record as the Padres, you know, that had all of its implications after last year. And then, of course, you know, the back and forth with the Mets and what's his name, Chris Clemmer from Barstool. Yeah. You know, that's been going on, and that's been a joy. So again, if you caught us last week, it would have been great. but alas, you know, reality set in. The Nats are now sliding after getting swept in 4 games by the Marlins. What are they, 2-11 against the Marlins on the year? Basically, single-handedly, you know, keeping the Marlins' playoff hopes alive, because the Marlins have a losing record against the rest of baseball. But yeah, Trey, what were your thoughts on how the series unfolded and you know, what the team is looking at like right now?
Well, you know, I thought we finally slayed those fish, but it wasn't meant to be this time.
Turns out we were the fish being slayed.
Yeah, for real. Yeah, it's really funny that we were technically in the hunt. We tied the Padres, who have been in the hunt the entire season, so you got to put us right there. But yeah, we've been sliding. The Marlins series was pretty pathetic. I mean, they played the sloppiest series they played all year. Especially in the field, lots of miscues, errors, missing the ball, throwing to the wrong base. Base running has been pretty suspect last week. So honestly, the fundamentals have been bad. And basically everything that the Nationals were doing well in August, they did poorly against the Marlins: pitching, defense, hitting, good at bats, clutch. Haven't had really any of those. So they'll be definitely looking to basically kind of wipe the slate clean of that Marlins series and head on to the next one.
Yeah, and it doesn't really get much easier, you know, for the final month. A lot of divisional matchups.
Yeah, a lot of Braves, some Dodgers, Braves. I believe, or yep. we might be done with. Yeah,
no, the Dodgers are next weekend.
Yeah, yeah, so pretty rough. So the Nats are basically out of it, which kind of just leads us directly into talking about the young pitching, because at this point, you know, we're not really competing for a playoff spot. So it's probably time to start reining in the innings, skipping starts. They've already gone to a 6-man rotation. But at this point, you know, with some of the guys that are looking very fatigued, like Gray and Gore, it's pretty crucial, honestly, that they get a start skipped in September just to get a little extra rest.
Yeah. You know, we'll talk about Gray first, or I will talk about Gray first, because obviously he pitched today, and unfortunately it was just more of the same. Like, I guess the final results weren't as ugly as, you know, some of the previous results, but they still weren't great. Only 4 innings, you know. Yeah, he only allowed 2 or 3 earned runs, but it just was not an effective, efficient start. Like, I hate saying this, I don't want to, you know, put it out into the atmosphere, or, you know, let the baseball gods hear me, but he's performing like a long reliever, where it's like he can give you a very inefficient 3 to 4 innings, but like he gets you through those 3 to 4 innings, and, you know, it's okay. But that's what he's looking like right now, and it stinks, because, you know, people are going to throw the stuff plus at me and stuff like that, which it is what it is. And I get, you know, there's a bit of luck to Josiah's first half performance, but, you know, he was showing the ability to get deep into the games, to keep his pitch count down, to keep the walks down for, you know, an extended period of time. It wasn't obviously a full season as we're seeing now, but, you know, it wasn't a flash. A flash implies it was just a couple of starts. Like, it was the majority of the season.
Yeah, you know, even if the entire first half,
right? Like, if he stinks it up in September, which, you know, that's where it's trending, like, still the majority of the season we got good Josiah Gray. Now it's just about getting good Josiah Gray, you know, over the full season, which, you know, is this topic at hand. But seeing him visibly frustrated today over, you know, the sun monsters, everyone's calling it, like, the day games at Nationals Park, like, the sun is just brutal. Like, it happened to us a lot early in the season, and, you know, Jacob Young lost a ball in the sun in center field, but, like, Josiah still walked 2 guys after that, and, like, he walked in 2 runs. Like, you know, you can't be frustrated over someone not catching a fly ball if you're going to turn around and walk the next 2 guys. Like, when Max would chew someone out, it's because he then had to go do it himself, right? And he was also good enough to go do it himself. And I think Josiah is good enough to do it himself, but, like, he's not anywhere near consistent enough. And, you know, him letting it boil over into visible frustration and, you know, yelling at teammates in a very inappropriate setting, you know, with all the cameras on you, as opposed to, like, the clubhouse or behind closed doors. Like, it just goes to show, like, this is getting to him. He was an all-star this year, and it's getting to him now that he's been bad for, like, the past month and a half. And, like, that's not an easy thing for him to go through. I can imagine, especially when trying to be the leader of this next great Nationals team. I think you have to skip a start at the bare minimum. I get they have a 6-man rotation, but the thing that kills me about Dave Martinez, and, you know, we can talk about the Martinez Hickey thing another time. Like, that's always going to be an issue as long as they're here. But, you know, they're like, oh, he looked great in a bullpen, so he's going to keep going. Like, most bullpens look good. Like, it, you know, there's no live hitting. Like, if you throw a curveball right down the middle, like, you're going to be like, oh yeah, get that down a little bit, but it was a great curveball. But like, in a game, someone might hit that, you know, 450, which is, or, like, you know, so most bullpens look good. I don't really know if that's the best thing we should be using to evaluate whether or not Gray is, you know, poised to continue on this season, but at the very least you have to skip a start. I just don't think there's any 2 ways around it. Gore, on the other hand, seems like he's on the bereavement list right now. And I don't know if we have many details. Obviously, we hope everything's all right. It seems like he is going to miss a start just because of that. And, like, Patrick Corbin's going to go on 5 days rest. And, you know, that was one of the benefits of going to the 6-man rotation. So it seems like he's going to miss a start, as it just so happened. So I think that is obviously going to help Gore. And because, you know, Gore's missing a start, I think it makes sense to have Gray miss a start. And, you know, like you said, we're not in the playoffs. Like, there's no really hope for it. Who cares who starts? If Corey Abbott has to get called up to start a game, is that really the end of the world if it means, like, the better long-term health of Josiah Gray? Like, no, I don't think so.
Yeah, and Corey Abbott threw six shutout innings with eight Ks.
The Rochester lab is unreal.
Like, yeah, I'm starting to believe that it's really a thing. Like, I keep every guy the, that comes up.
Yeah, I keep seeing the Jackson Rutledge stat lines, and I used to be really high on Jackson Rutledge, and then I came crashing down, and now I'm kind of like okay as far as like hype and anticipation for him. He still walks too many guys, but like I see five scoreless innings, and I'm just like, why can't he be Blake Snell, where he, you know, shoves, he walks some guys, but he can shove. Like, I'm like now talking myself back into it. Like, let's get some Jackson Rutledge up here when ready.
I'd love to see him next season though, for sure.
Oh yeah. Speaking of Rochester has sent us some, you know, pretty good replacements, which, you know, I think back to the Derek Hill and, you know, the Blake Rutherford and how, and even Alex Call, like how they lit up AAA and obviously not so great in the majors, but Carter Kieboom came up, Travis Blankenhorn came up, and Amos Willingham was recalled. And all three of them, Kieboom has cooled a little bit as of late, but has still, he hit some big home runs in the Yankee series. And what was the series after that? I can't remember, where he hit what ended up being one of the, you know, basically the game winning run. And then
the other Marlins series.
It was the, all right. Yeah. I was like, that wasn't this series.
Yeah. The Marlins series are blending in for me too.
Right. Exactly. But Blankenhorn homered in his first game, and he's been getting on base, drawing walks, and seems to be finally, at least decent call up from AAA. And we talked about the Rochester pitching lab. Hopefully they fixed Amos Willingham, because I think there's potential as a reliever there. He covered three scoreless innings today or yesterday. So like there's potential. What do you think of like the Nats, I guess, depth? Cause none of them, maybe Kieboom, there's an argument, but none of them are like long-term pieces, but they're depth. And that's obviously what every team needs.
Yeah. Well, that's certainly what the Nats need in terms of the major league depth and the minor league depth, all throughout the organization. They have a lot of the high end talent, but they're not, you know, getting those late round picks that come up and are successful. I've been excited about the way Kieboom swung the bat. Would like him to walk more going forward, but obviously we know that's not really the Nats philosophy, but we'll see. Blankenhorn's been too soon, but he's never really had a real chance, so we'll see.
Yeah.
And Willingham's been intriguing to me since he came up, because he throws gas. He's got some good stuff. It's just a matter of locating it. And he did a lot better yesterday of locating, especially his slider. So we'll see if his trip to AAA really, really makes a difference for him.
Yeah, hopefully he can stick around, because the bullpen,
and we need some depth in the bullpen,
is all over the place right now. I probably worth mentioning that Tanner Rainey seems to be back sooner rather than later. He's on a AAA rehab assignment right now, or a major league rehab assignment in AAA. So he's going to take someone's spot. He's going to be up before the season's over, but it'll probably be the lowest performing player as opposed to Amos Willingham, just because he was the last guy called up. It's going to be, you know, whoever's performing poorly is going to be the odd man out. Speaking of performing poorly, he was until this series. Lane Thomas is kind of, I don't know, I have a love-hate relationship with Lane Thomas. Like, I want to just enjoy it for what it is, but people are making out to be way more than it is, and so it's, you know, conflicting.
Yeah, it's the yin-yang of that.
Yeah, banged up a little bit, but had a great series. You know, what are your thoughts on Lane Thomas?
Well, I was excited that he finally seemed to come back down to hitting with some power again. That he was kind of banged up. They rested him because of a back injury. Maybe that was affecting him during August, because despite the Nats winning a lot during August, Lane Thomas was pretty mediocre. But I wanted to talk about specifically his at-bat today against Sandy Alcantara and his home run, because certain home runs are different than others. Hanging curveball in a regular season game down by eight is not the same as Kyle Schwarber hitting a 490-foot ball in San Diego in November or October. So some home runs are different than others. And I think Lane Thomas hit one of the more impressive homers that I've seen from a Nats hitter today in a while. It went very far, but more importantly, it was the pitch and the location. 100-mile-per-hour sinker from a great pitcher. I know he hasn't been as good this year, Alcantara, but you know,
his second half has been much better.
Yeah, and he's throwing 100 still really good. He's throwing 100-mile-per-hour sinker. It gets in on Lane Thomas's hands, and somehow he pulls the hands in, absolutely crushed it, hit like 111-mile-per-hour. But just to be able to get the barrel out enough to keep that ball fair of where it was located, I was honestly genuinely really impressed with that. And that kind of honestly sparked something in me, like, he's actually got some hitting skill. I mean, I know he's had a good season. We've been questioning, like, is it real? Is it not? But that's not many guys can do that. So I got to give him his credit for that one. I just wanted to gush about that specific homer because I thought it was so impressive.
Yeah, I thought you were a believer.
I think I'm more of a believer than other people now, I think.
Jeez.
I don't think he's an all-star all the time, okay? I'm not like that, but I kind of like him. Right?
I think he's a fine fourth outfielder and is completely expendable in the right deal.
Yeah, I can't really argue against that either.
All right, the last bit of Nats news before we transition into MLB and some of the burning topics around the league and playoff races and whatnot. Johnny DePuglia of the Nationals since 2009. Like, it's not like he just came into the organization. He's been here for a while. Rizzo's right-hand man. He was promoted to assistant general manager after the 2019 season. Obviously, everyone knows what happened in 2019. Signed Juan Soto, among others. I love the among others in this news does so much work.
Yeah, I know, for real.
But he resigned kind of unexpectedly. I believe it was Saturday, over the weekend. And it kind of just fuels the conjecture a little bit more surrounding Mike Rizzo. Davey Martinez was extended, but that was more Rizzo's decision, whereas Rizzo being extended is more on the ownership. And obviously everyone knows the ownership is in flux with the hopefully pending sale of the team, or impending sale of the team. But regardless, let's say Rizzo is back, which does seem like the likeliest outcome, especially now that the White Sox have filled their vacancy for general manager. It still leaves the Nats with a vacancy in their international scouting director, which everyone's like, it's a huge loss. Like, Bob Nightingale was throwing out the propaganda. Yes, he signed Juan Soto. Credit where credit is due. Like, obviously, that's a massive signing. Look at his other signings, though. Like, the cream of the crop. Yeah, I guess you could throw Victor Robles in there. But after Victor Robles, the cream of the crop is, like, Wilmer Defoe. Or, like, Wander Suero. Or Pedro Severino. Like, all guys that had a cup of coffee with the Nats and then had to be released because they were ultimately so bad, even in bench spots. And, like, the guys that he signed more recently, like Yasiel Antuna, had to be removed from the 40-man roster just because he wasn't showing enough promise. Andre Lara, guys like that. I'm forgetting the shortstop's name. That
I know who you're talking about, though.
But, like, the guys he signed recently, they're not performing well either. And, you know, Christian Vaquero could be something, but we're years and years away from ever finding out. The fact of the matter is the Dominican Summer League team is 11-39 this year. Not only are they the last in their division, they are last in all of the DSL by like a wide margin. So
it's not close.
I do think this is more performance based, but the fact that him, Johnny or DePuglia and Rizzo had been so close since 2009, just again, adds fuel to the fire. Like, what the heck is going on in the Nats front office?
Yeah. I mean, it goes back to what I was saying earlier about lack of depth. I mean, the high end talent is generally going to come through and at least provide you with something. It's those under the radar guys, the late round draft picks and the international signings. And when you don't have that help, you really start to feel it when in the pitching depth, in your positional depth, throughout the entire organization. And that's definitely been an issue for the Nats in recent years. So, for sure. Yeah, it is a little bizarre that there's been no follow up on he left. So that's definitely something to keep in mind as something that's just kind of interesting. I don't really think it's much more than that, but
if you are like one of those people that are like very concerned about this move, just know this is also the same guy that absolutely whiffed on Ronald Acuña. Acuña was gonna sign with the Nats, for those that don't know, and then the Braves offered like $500,000 more, And Acuña went back to Nat saying, you know, I got offered this. Can you match or exceed it? And DePuglia said no. And we all know how that's turning out. So, you know, whether that stings more or eases the sting of losing him, I think it's a good opportunity for the Nats to get more forward-thinking individuals in the scouting department and as assistant general manager, and really let's make this player development, you know, kick it into overdrive and see if we really can't make something happen.
Yeah, I'm absolutely with you there.
Yeah. All right. We are going to pause really quickly for a word from our sponsors.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, we're back and we're talking Major League Baseball now. And there is a race. Obviously, you know, when we get into September, there's all kinds of races that, you know, if your team's out of it like the Nats are, you know, you're shifting your focus elsewhere to see what, you know, what might transpire out west, you know, with the late night baseball or everything else. There's a bunch of good races, but arguably none better than the NL MVP right now. If you go back a month ago, it was Ronald Acuña by a wide margin. If you go back 3 months ago, it was Ronald Acuña, maybe Corbin Carroll, but this is just to say Ronald Acuña has been kind of the favorite for 75% of the season, until one Marcus Lynn Betts has turned it on. We talked about the Nats being great in August. Mookie Betts had like the August to remember for a lifetime. But if you look at their stats as it is right now, and we're recording September 3rd, Mookie Betts 7.6 F4, 313 average, 1021 OPS, 38 home runs. Acuña 7 F4, 337 average, 1001 OPS, and 32 home runs. But obviously Acuña just got to 60 steals, which is a, you know, big milestone in and of itself. Yeah, it's crazy. But then you do want to give some credit to Freddie Freeman, who's been pretty consistent all along. And I think if we weren't in the midst of like one of the greatest MVP chases or battles in recent memory, Freddie Freeman would be a more than fine MVP on like any other year. Yeah. 6.9 F4, 338 average, 994 OPS, 25 home runs. So it's just like, it's not really pick your poison, but like you can't go wrong. Like all three of these guys are insane, and of course Betts and Freeman are playing on the same team, and Acuña is just leading the best team in baseball right now. So it's like, are you leaning one way or another for NL MVP
right now? No, I don't know who I would pick, honestly. I mean, even Freeman is right there. Yeah. with Acuña and the WAR numbers and the OPS. I mean, I think it's going to come down to whichever one of those three players has the best September. And that's going to be, it's going to be full blown recency bias. But at that point, I mean, it probably wouldn't be, because they're so close right now. So whoever has the best month is probably going to be the clear cut guy. I mean, I don't even know though, because they could all have good months and then we're still sitting here and with the same conversation.
Yeah, same spot in a month from now.
Yeah. I think the only thing I think people should pay a little bit more attention to though is, or maybe pay less attention to, is that stolen base home run number, because Acuña's stealing a lot of bases. He's stealing more than everybody. Steals are up this season, so there is that to consider. But more importantly, his defense, it's been bad, not good, not okay, bad, simply. So you have to take that into account. And you got Mookie, who's been playing pretty damn good, and he's been playing he's been playing right field, he's been playing second base, and he's been playing shortstop. And that positional versatility for me would probably pick me to vote Betts right now. But I don't want to have to make a pick, because this is still so tough, because Acuña is still amazing. He's had an amazing season. So it's probably going to be whoever has the best September.
So I have who I would pick, and then I have who I am 99% sure will win.
Yeah.
I would pick Mookie Betts in a heartbeat. I think if you're going off like I think if you're going off the pure definition of most valuable player, it's without a question,
yeah,
Mookie Betts.
I can see it, yeah.
If you want to go most outstanding player, which is typically what all MVP races are, yeah, that's Acuña. Like it just is. Yeah, like Mookie Betts might have the edge in OPS and home runs, but it's Acuña. Like there's no really debate for that. But you know, you just mentioned the Dodgers shortstop has been a black hole ever since the Gavin Lux injury.
Yeah.
Like they've tried four different people there, and you know, they're pulling in a Gold Glove right fielder to go play shortstop because, like, one, they needed it, and two, he's able to do that, which is just absolutely insane. He hasn't played infield regularly since like the minors, and he's doing it for one of the best teams in baseball and without really skipping a beat, and it's not affecting him offensively either. Like, you know, we always talk about the consistency, you know, defensively and how it might impact offensive output and stuff like that. Doesn't matter to Mookie at all. But I do think Acuña wins. He has all the sexy milestones, the stolen bases, and, you know, the hardest hit home run in the StatCast era, yeah, which was just insane. Like, he has all the flash, whereas Mookie Betts is just Mookie Betts. So, and also Acuña hasn't won one before. So I do think Acuña will end up winning it.
Yeah, I think that's definitely good to differentiate between who we think should win and who probably will, because I think you're right. Those counting stats are probably going to be eye-popping for a lot of voters.
And I don't have any problem with Acuña winning either.
Oh yeah, I mean, he's been these three seasons between all three of those players have been elite. Like, I mean they're already all at 7 WAR. There's a month left, so that's pretty nuts.
F-WAR too, which is a little bit more for real. You know, strict on how they grade.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it's just crazy.
It'll be fun.
That'll be really fun. Another fun race is also out west, and that's the AL West, which is probably the best divisional battle going on with a month left. Seattle, as of again, September 3rd, they're 77-59. Houston is 77-60. Texas is 76-60. So, like, it's anyone's race. It's been Texas for the majority of the year, but Seattle has gotten extremely hot since, you know, the All-Star break and even before that, but they're really turning it on as of late. And then Houston has the experience. They've been there, done that. They brought back Justin Verlander. Like, there's no reason they can't do it again. Like, that's how good they are. They won the World Series last year, right?
Yes, they did.
Are we forgetting that? And yeah, I know their team looks a little bit different, but they still have all the bones of, you know, the team that's been there so often since, what, 2017. And yeah, people are going to throw out the chat. I don't care. Like, you still have to go out there and execute. And, you know, there's no trash cans when they're pitching, you know, and they're in the field and, you know, all that stuff. So it's anyone's race, but that is the division to watch right now. Who do you think wins it?
Oh, man. You know what? I'm going all in with the Seattle Mariners winning that division, breaking that curse.
Absolutely, brother. Absolutely.
Yeah. And, you know, I want it because we all kind of are rooting for the Mariners, I feel like, in general. But it just makes sense. They're as hot as any team right now, and they're not slowing down. It's actually crazy how sustained the success has been at this point. It's been pretty much 2 months of this. They actually, funnily enough, set their franchise record for wins in a month in August, which I thought was completely insane because they have
the 2001 record. Yeah.
Turns out 2001, their top was 20 wins in a month. They did it like three times, but they didn't get to 21. So I found that to be absolutely ridiculous and crazy. But yeah, no, I'm going to go with Seattle. I really think they're going to do it.
Yeah, I would love that. I also root for the Blue Jays, so I would love to see Houston fall out, and so that way the Blue Jays get the final spot. But I think all three of these teams being in the postseason would make for a very exciting postseason.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Because they've seen each other a lot. You know, they've all made, you know, whether it was last year or this year, big deadline acquisitions to really help put them over the top. You know, it just makes for good October baseball when teams like this are, you know, the ones competing and not teams that, you know, just so happen to find their way into the playoffs, which I guess doesn't happen so much in baseball. I'm thinking more other sports, but
yeah,
baseball's good. We like baseball. The other news from the AL West is one I didn't see coming, but like once you stop and think about it a little bit more, I guess it makes sense. It's just, it's kind of a sad story, to be honest.
Yeah, it's just tragedy.
But yeah, tragedy. Yeah, tragic. That's, this is, what's the, Monty would love this. Like, what's the play? You're not supposed to, Hamlet. You're not supposed to talk about Hamlet or whatever. Like, the angels feel like Hamlet. Like, you know, you say angels and something bad happens. The angels dumped so many players. Lucas Giolito, Ronaldo Lopez, who they acquired at the deadline. They spent, you know, 2 weeks with the team. They're gone, claimed by the Guardians. Matt Moore, I don't remember where Matt Moore went, but he was dumped too. Hunter Renfroe, he's gone, claimed by the Reds. Dominic Leone, he's gone, claimed by the Mariners, who we were just talking about. Randall Grichuk, I believe he's gone. I don't know what happens if you go unclaimed. I believe he's gone. I need to follow up on that, but yeah, he got waived. And all of this, you know, if you're wondering, like, what the hell? They just gave up, you know, two of their three top prospects for Giolito and Lopez and for 2 weeks and all this stuff. Like, why would they just dump them? Well, it's to get them under the luxury tax. They were, like, as it stood, over the luxury tax. They made all these moves to try to get under it because not only does it save them from a year of being over the luxury tax, but when Shohei Ohtani signs elsewhere, not if, but when he signs elsewhere, that comp pick turns from a fourth round into, I believe, like a third or second round because they were under the tax. So, you know, it makes sense. They're just trying to recoup as much value as possible. It, you know, if you look at the salary that they dump, it was only like, I think about $6 million, which is really not a lot, but you know, it's for basically 1 month of baseball. And it was just, well, actually it wasn't enough because Grichuk, in true Angels tragedy, Grichuk was not claimed. So it did not get them under it, but then they put Max Stassi on the restricted list and are not paying him for September, which knocked them back down. So I guess kind of creative maneuvering to get them back under it. But yeah, this is all just a failed deadline and it's tragic. Yeah. Cause I loved the aggressiveness. I thought it was stupid. I thought you just take the haul for Ohtani and, you know, turn your team around. Like, I guess what the Nats did with Soto, but I appreciated them going in. It could not have blown up any more spectacularly than it did.
Yeah. I mean, you pretty much hit it right on the head, but I kind of respect it. I respect their decision to go for it, even though it was definitely stupid. They made their choice and went for it. And I respect the fact that they have immediately recognized that they were stupid, because a lot of times it'll take a lot longer to realize you were dumb. The Rockies are still in that position where their guys don't realize that they're stupid. So it's like, it's almost like a step towards realizing, yeah, we're bad. We did a bad thing. Let's just end it quick.
Yeah.
So I kind of respect that part, although it's fixing their own silly mistake, but
yeah, they didn't let it drag out, which I guess there's something to be said, but it's just, and that we didn't even talk about Mike Trout coming back for 24 hours before being injured again.
Yeah. I know. It's like a full blown disaster in Anaheim.
It's so bad. It's so bad. Yeah.
Sorry, Angels fans.
Yeah, I'm so sorry about that.
I'm sure you're used to this.
Hope things get better, but it does not sound like it's any any hope on the horizon. All right, final bit of news. We're gonna go down to the farm, talk some minor league baseball for the Nats, and we're gonna put the spotlight on Harrisburg, which normally, under basically any other circumstances, would be a great thing, an exciting thing. But unfortunately, right now, there's a bit of the Harrisburg blues going on since Dylan Cruz got called up aggressively. Like, but let's not get it twisted. Like, getting promoted from single A over high A to double A is a big step. So seeing Dylan Cruz struggle initially through his 10 games in Harrisburg is not too concerning. What's concerning is the entire lineup's gone cold. If you look at James Wood, he has like a 650 OPS in his last 10 games. We're going to use 10 games because obviously that's when Dylan Cruz got called up, but he has a 650 OPS. He's striking out 36% of the time. Brady House has like a 590 OPS. He's striking out 26% of the time. Trey Lipscomb, who had been like the darling of the double A season, he has been on fire. He is significantly cooled off as of late. 340 OPS in his last 10 games. He's not striking out as much, so that's good that he's still maintaining some bat to ball skill. The big concern, And one we really need to have a conversation about in the offseason is Robert Hassel III. This dude may not see the majors at this point. Like, they're just not, between the injuries, like, hamate injury is not an easy thing to come back from, but, you know, between the injuries and just the lack of performance, like, we may not see him in the majors at least anytime soon. He has a 360 OPS in his last 10 games. He's striking out 49% of the time, dude.
Yeah, that was what I was going to say. It was my biggest concern is the K rate with Hassel. It's I'm actually going to blame myself for this, because right, I'm pretty sure
you heard it here first.
I'm pretty sure I tweeted something along the lines of, this is the AA murderer's row.
I put out an article along the same line, so you're not alone in the fault here.
Yeah, murderer's row, as in they have all died. So, like, it's really
call
really
an ambulance, bad. But not for their opponent.
Yeah, it's really bad that all, I don't get it. It's just all of them. They were all doing so well, and then Cruz came up, and now they're all, or well, not Hassel didn't do that well, but, you know, Lipscomb, House, Wood, they were all doing well. So that's weird. Hopefully, it's just kind of an anomaly, some kind of, you know, they're fatigued. I don't know, something. Because that's just kind of bizarre. I feel like we'll probably end up forgetting that this happened at some point, but like it is pretty weird to look at, especially after we thought they were going to be.
Yeah,
so
hopefully
good.
It's just a bump in the road, but like let me rephrase. I don't hate being the I told you so guy. I hate that it had to come under these circumstances.
Yeah.
People are talking way too much about Dylan Cruz is going to be in the major leagues by, you know, the end of the year, and crazy talk, and they're like, oh well, Juan Soto did it, why can't Dylan Cruz do it? I'm just like, if we're gonna compare everyone to Juan Soto, like, what's the
point?
He
also didn't do that like that either, so
well,
he didn't
come he skipped AAA. He only spent like 19 games or even less than that in AA, so it was very aggressive. But I get,
he had a year before that, but he got hurt.
But we can't go around comparing dudes to Juan Soto. Like, that's just like, what are we doing here? We can't do that. So I'm not concerned. It just stinks, because it was so cool to see them all play together. And, you know, you slide in KB Ruiz and CJ Abrams to, you know, that lineup, and it kind of starts to come together, and you're like, Oh man, like 2 years from now, 3 years from now, we are bumping. But unfortunately, like, not off to the best of starts, but hopefully they pick it up before the season ends in a couple of weeks.
Small sample size, so it's not a huge deal, but like, it's just funny.
Yeah, in true Nats fashion.
It's very ironic that everybody was just so hype about it, and this is what happens. Oh yeah.
Like how the Nats were going to get that final wild card spot.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, fun times. August was fun.
Yeah, that was good. Can we go back?
No matter what happens the rest of the year, we'll always have August. So, oh man, but that does it for our lineup. You got anything else before we head out?
No, I think we got to everything I wanted to talk about today.
Absolutely. Well, again, thank you all to all the listeners for embarking with us on this new show and new venture. And again, to all the new listeners that join us along the way, we're super excited to get this thing going and off the ground. And like Trey said at the beginning, take September to give us feedback. And, you know, we're going to iron everything out and make this thing a well-oiled machine for 2024. So very, very excited for that.
Yep.
Absolutely. Well, thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Be sure to follow us on Twitter. Follow the show. I should have plugged the show. Although, if you're looking at this on YouTube, as you should be, highly encourage you. All right. Left-hand side? Left-hand
right,
side.
Right-hand side is the right. Yeah.
On one of my sides.
I can't remember.
Well, actually, that's the lineup. Below me is where all the handles are.
Yes.
and stuff like that. The show. At District Baseball, you can follow it at District BSB. Be sure to follow that. Is the old Half Street High Heat account. So if you're already following it or that show, you're now following the new one. So congratulations. But all the latest content will be there as well. So again, very excited to get this thing going, and appreciate you guys being here.
Thanks, guys.
See ya. We'll be right back.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.